Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the IA School of Thought series with me, Sia Kamal. This series is based on the IA book, School of Thought, 101 Great Liberal Thinkers by Eamon Butler, which, as the title suggests, summarises the thoughts of leading classical liberal thinkers on a range of issues and discusses them within a modern context. All the episodes in this series and all our other online content can be found on the IA YouTube channel, IEA London, on Podbean, and on our website, ia.org.uk. Now, today's featured thinker is French economist, writer, and one-time politician, Frédéric Bastiat. And to discuss his life and his contribution to liberal thought, I'm delighted to be joined by Madeleine Grant, who's the assistant comment editor for the Daily Telegraph and a Sunday Telegraph columnist. Madeleine, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Can I start off by asking, why did you pick Bastiat? What was it about him? Did he inspire you in particular? Is there something that you particularly admire about him? You know, or is there a more personal reason?
Well, in some ways it is quite a personal reason because I don't have any kind of formal economic training. It's just a kind of personal interest that developed, and I used to work at the IEA and I learned a great deal. And one of the things I really admire about Frédéric Bastiat is that he's a fantastic communicator. He's a fantastic writer on economics and incredibly lucid. To read his essays today, you feel as if they, you know, they could have been written today, even though we're talking about sort of 170 years ago. There's a very much a contemporary feel to it, and not least because many of the economic fallacies that he tries to expose are, you know, are still with us today and are still far too prevalent in political thinking. And I think that at a time when economics generally is becoming quite mathematical and beyond the reach of many people who lack that formal training, I think that those of us who are in the business of trying to fight for free markets could learn a lot from Bastiat about how to make those ideas accessible and bring them to the wider public.
Now, you spoke about some of his ideas that are still relevant today. For example, he talks about the seen and unforeseen, which clearly ties in with issues such as unintended consequences. But what particular ideas were there that stood out for you?
Well, that's definitely one of them, the law of unintended consequences. I mean, I would argue that my understanding, at least, is that Bastiat was one of the first writers to really explore the concept of opportunity cost, although he didn't, you know, he didn't call it that at the time. You know, it's a hugely important concept that you consider the invisible cost of opportunities foregone, as well as what you can see above the surface. And to this day, it's very, very much neglected by politicians and, you know, commentators more generally. How often do we hear of politicians, for example, talking about how many jobs are going to be created by a government scheme that, you know, has obviously been paid for by taxpayer expenditure? But not considering what that money might have been employed to do had it stayed in the pockets of the taxpayer. There's this assumption that, again, we're doing surface level analysis in which we consider only what we can see above the surface. And I think Bastiat would have, you know, would have a lot to say about, as much to say about things like HS2. He'd have a great deal to say about coronavirus today. As I said before, whenever I read his essays, I'm struck by the contemporary nature of them.
It's interesting you say that, because quite often on this series, when I ask the interviewees about their particular chosen author, I quite often ask them the question, how influential do you think they've been in shaping the current classical liberal narrative and political thought as a whole? And it's interesting that you straight away said how much he does shape contemporary thinking, and many of his ideas are still relevant today.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how much he's influenced classic liberal thought in general, because I'm not sure that he's as widely known as he should be. I think he's much better known in America, and I think the reason for that was that that his essays were translated quite early on in America and gained a bigger audience there than they did on this side of the pond. But yes, he certainly anticipates a great deal of classic liberal thought. You know, the point of Friedrich Hayek credited him with exposing the limitations of judging economic policy just by its immediate effects. I think arguably he wrote, I think, that taxes kill taxes. What he meant by that is that you may be suppressing future tax takes by the lack of economic freedom that comes as a result of high taxes, which seems to be a version of the kind of Laffer curve thinking that we're probably more familiar with. And also, I think he contributes, or certainly anticipates, some of the ideas of public choice economics. In his longer essay, The Law, Bastiat asks us to consider how we can tell when laws are unjust, and when perhaps the lawmaker himself is behaving in an unjust way, and has potentially become a source of law breaking themselves. And he concludes that when the person enforcing the law is allowed to do things with other people's lives and property that would be illegal if the citizens were to do that to them, then the law has become perverted. And I think in this way that sort of foreshadows things like public choice economics, which has so much to say about the terrible incentives created by big government, for example, and how politicians often have more face-saving incentives as opposed to seeking to maximise the wealth of their citizens or defend their private property.
You said in your earlier answer that his ideas were transmitted across the Atlantic relatively early. In fact, probably more across the Atlantic than across the Channel. Was he someone who struggled to get his ideas heard at the time, only to be vindicated later, or did he have an immediate impact?
I think that his essays were very widely read. His pamphlets gained huge traction quite early on because simply that they were so well written, so humorous and memorable. So you have things like the parable of the broken window, which I've mentioned, but also the parable of the candlestick makers, or the candle makers, sorry, where they are, he imagines a scenario in which the candle makers are petitioning to block out the sun, because that is obviously a source of competition for their candles. He does this a lot, where he takes the kind of reductio ad absurdum idea to expose the ludicrous thinking behind the idea itself. And I think that was quite a new way of doing it. It was humorous and comical, and I'm not surprised that it gained a wide audience, because as I said before, it's witty and humorous, and a compelling way of communicating, perhaps a bit more vibrant than some of the other economic writing that was happening at the time. And the other thing about Bastiat was that he came to his writing quite late in his career. I think it was only in the 1840s. He lived to 1850, so he died quite young. I think he was 49, died of tuberculosis. So he had only had a few years where he was actually writing, but in that time his output was enormous. It was almost as if he kind of sensed that he didn't have that long in order to get his ideas across. But prior to that, he served in French politics. He was in the Senate, where he was a vigorous opponent of protectionism and tariffs, and he was very influenced by the work that Richard Cobden was doing, anti-corn laws, and very much wanted to become the kind of the French Cobden. So I'm not sure exactly what his political impact was, but I'm certain that his pamphlets got a very wide readership at the time, and he set up his own magazine and in order to pump out more of this kind of output.
Why do you think he's more known about in the United States than, say, the UK? Is it because we had just had our own Enlightenment, if you like, this, you know, Scottish Enlightenment thinkers, for example?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think generally that America does have freedom. It's more kind of ingrained into the American consciousness. I have to say, I've seen signs of that during this pandemic, in fact, where that in Britain there's been a much higher level of compliance with the restrictions. It has actually quite surprised me, the level of compliance, whereas in America there's been much more pushback from politicians and actual members of the public, and there is a whole tradition of kind of liberty that we do have, a tradition of liberty in Britain, but it's longer standing, it's less, I'd say there's a lot that's bound up with kind of common law, goes back to Magna Carta. There's long-standing traditions of liberty, whereas I think countries like France and the US were perhaps a bit more influenced by the ideas of the Enlightenment, which themselves were very influential for Bastiat.
Let me ask you a bit more about him. We know that he died quite young, as you say, but I think he's 48 or 49 when he died. What more do we know about him and his personal life?
Well, he was born at the turn of the 19th century in France. He was orphaned at a very young age. He was in a kind of, I suppose, a sort of mercantile family. They ran an exporting business in a town called Bayonne. And after he was orphaned, he was raised by his paternal grandparents. I think that his early experiences, he left school at the age of 17 to work in the family exporting business. And I think this really informed his hatred of protectionism and other restrictions of trade, because in this town, he could see the impact firsthand. It was a kind of slightly flagging industrial town where, you know, he could see from looking at the kind of shuttered warehouses and the poverty and the unemployment that had been caused by tariffs and other restrictions on trade. So I think that really informed his thinking. And then when he was 25, he inherited property from his grandparents, which enabled him to live more the life of a gentleman. And then he later entered politics, first as a district judge, and then later on in the French Senate, I believe it's called, but don't quote me on that, I might have got that wrong, but in the French Parliament. And he sat in politics. As I said, he was a massive opponent of tariffs and protectionism, highly influenced by people like Richard Cobden. And then actually quite late in his life, which was sadly very short, I often wonder what his contribution would have been like had he lived a bit longer. He entered politics, and then alongside that, he was managing this magazine, and he was writing a huge series of pamphlets and essays defending free trade. And then he sadly died of tuberculosis in 1850.
Yes, and as you say, he was a member of the French National Assembly for a while, I believe, just
National
after...
Assembly, that's it. Sorry, no. Not Senate.
don't worry. I would know this. I'm an ex-politician, so I remember these things. It's interesting. You talked about Art Laffer mentioning him. Art Laffer was very honest about who influenced him. In a previous podcast in the series, we talked about Ibn Khaldun, and Laffer said he was also influenced by Ibn Khaldun. Who do you think influenced Bastiat himself?
So I've mentioned Richard Cobden. I think Bastiat saw him as a real inspiration in terms of someone who was working in politics at a similar time and working to change public opinion towards protectionism in his work on the repeal of the Corn Laws. He was also very influenced by the writings of Adam Smith and by the great French free market economists like Jean-Baptiste Say and François Quesnay. And these were among some of the precursors to the modern Austrian school of economics, having sort of come up with, developed the idea that the market is a kind of dynamic and competitive process, and things like the law of diminishing marginal utility, and in general being very opposed to price controls and government economic intervention in general. But I also think he was heavily animated actually by some of his ideological enemies as well. So he was very critical of people like Rousseau, who were arguing that property rights were these kind of artificial things that were implemented only by and assured only by the government, whereas Bastiat believed very strongly that they were property rights were natural and universal rights, but they also came from God rather than from the government.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention the French liberal school, because it is a often neglected school of thought in the UK, and many people know that it did influence the Austrian school later on, and it's quite sad in the UK that we don't know that much about the French liberal school. Now we talk about the fact that who he was influenced by, and we've spoken about Laffer and Hayek. Were there any others who were inspired by Bastiat's work himself?
Well, I think that public choice theory owes a great deal to it. Hayek gave him a lot of credit for his ideas. Milton Friedman was also influenced, I would say, by Frederick Bastiat. But in general, I would say that he's not as well known as he should be in this country. But often that the insights that he made had a kind of timeless wisdom that found their way into the public consciousness more generally. And of course, he was writing for a more popular audience than many economists do. So actually, although I think he had a huge influence on other economists, I think that the bigger impact was in managing to find a way of expressing these simple but so important economic concepts to people who perhaps weren't familiar already with economics. And that's the big lesson that I think we ought to take from him about how he managed to evoke these concepts so simply and so beautifully.
So what do you think is or are the biggest lessons that we can learn from him today? You know, you talked about the lessons that we can learn there. But and I suppose that's a two-part question. One, in the 21st century. But secondly, you and I are speaking during the lockdown caused by the pandemic. Now, are there lessons for us during the pandemic as well?
Yeah, definitely. Massive lessons during the pandemic. I actually tried to pitch an article to my editor which said this, but he said that not enough people were familiar with Bastiat, so that it might be a bit arcane. But I've seen a lot of the broken window thinking in the last few months. For example, many politicians and commentators seem to be talking only about saving lives initially from the virus now, and they are not talking about the harm that's likely to come down the road from the effects of lockdown, and also the fact that many people have been staying at home and they haven't been seeking treatment for illness. These are the deaths that are caused by lockdown rather than COVID, but they should obviously be seen as a consequence of COVID as well. And I also think that some commentators have made quite simplistic assumptions because they've only been considering the surface level detail. So for example, I've seen many people assuming that our very rigorous lockdown, well, it's not as rigorous as some countries, but it's still pretty rigorous. And we've been keeping it going a lot longer than many countries in Europe. That our lockdown they assume automatically that it's saved many lives. When in fact, you actually can't say that with confidence, given that countries like, for example, Sweden has had a much more modest lockdown and a very similar trajectory of the disease. And Japan has somehow minimized deaths with no lockdown at all. You know, there's still so much that we don't understand about this virus, but I think that as per the broken window thinking that Bastiat outlined, lots of people have still made very bold claims with complete confidence because they haven't been thinking about the counterfactual of the matter.
Now, you say you made a pitch, maybe you'll get in trouble for this, but you said you made a pitch to your editor to write an article. If I was to ask you for the 30-second elevator pitch, as it were, if I said, no, Madeleine, no, why did you choose Bastiat, what would you say?
Well, I was going to write very much what I just said to you now about the coronavirus and the broken window thinking. I did write an article for CapEx once, which was, I think it was the best piece that I've written for CapEx. It was all because of Bastiat, but it was all about how in the Brexit debate, there's been a lack of that kind of thinking as well. So for example, people, if you consider something like the common external tariff raises prices, people don't really notice that because that becomes normal to them to pay extra for their goods. But then what about the money that they might have spent on other stuff without those tariffs in place? People consider, for example, the question of quotas for farming and so on. But actually, if you look at how a country like New Zealand was able to reduce its assistance that was being given to farmers by the government, and it innovated in all kinds of clever ways that you wouldn't have seen had that state support still been in place, because that wouldn't have been necessary. And this is a case that Bastiat makes endlessly, that actually the problem with government intervention is that it sometimes hampers the trial and error process of free markets that you need to take place. You need businesses to fail. You need the freedom to give it a go. And sometimes, very often, in fact, government intervention has the effect of kind of hindering that process from taking place, so that we never know what industries might and what innovations might have sprung up from it.
It's interesting you say that, because last week, as you know, the UK government announced its UK global tariff. And what was interesting with the EU external tariff, I think it was 47% of goods were tariff-free to the UK, whereas actually now with the new UK global tariff, I think it's going to be 60% of goods will be tariff-free to the UK. But even then, the UK government admits that it's listened to some of the industry's lobbying and maintained tariffs on, for example, agricultural produce, ceramics, for example. And so there is an unintended or unseen price for consumers.
There is. And again, I think that's something that wouldn't have surprised Bastiat at all, given his incredibly eloquent explanation of how politicians, the people in charge, can often have the wrong incentives, and they have to please the vested interest groups. You know, the candle makers, for example, obviously have an incentive in lobbying for less competition for their goods. And this hasn't changed. Adam Smith talked about the, you know, people of the same trade seldom meet, but some conspiracy against the public emerges and some contrivance to raise prices. I've probably misquoted that completely, but the conspiracy against the public thing is still here. It's all amongst us. We can see it. And it's not helped by politicians who often have particular ideological constituencies that they have to please. And obviously the Conservative Party and farmers is a good example.
Yes, of course. And also the other thing we know about international trade or the political economy of international trade is that you have sort of concentrated losses and dispersed winners. And quite often the concentrated losses are the ones who have the sort of the more vocal voices, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Madeleine, that's a wonderful point on which to end. Thank you very much for joining us. I think many people listening to this or watching this today will realise how influential Bastiat and still how relevant he still is today when we think about some of the problems confronting society and we decide to look at these issues via a classical liberal perspective, if you like. Can I also thank our listeners and our viewers today? If you would like more information on our publications, our webinars, and our other online content, particularly during lockdown, please check out our YouTube channel, IA London, and our podcasts on Podbean. To help us keep providing free content during these tough times, please do consider making a contribution, no matter how modest. You can do this by donating online at ia.org.uk. Thank you for watching or listening today, and we hope that you'll join us again soon. Thank you.